This is Fresh Air. When Grace Paley was named New York's first official state writer in 1986, she said the only thing nicer might be if she got an award from her block. Well, that'll give you a sense of what she writes about, the people from the neighborhood. Her neighborhoods have been the Bronx, where she grew up, Greenwich Village, where she raised her children, and Vermont, where she now lives. Vermont is a surprising place for the writer Anne Tyler once described as urban to an unusual degree. Paley is best known for her three collections of short stories and for her work as a peace and women's rights activist. She wrote poems even before she wrote stories, and she has a new book of new and collected poems. Here's one of them.
This poem called Housing is, it's really, I mean, I sort of wrote it as a kind of a joke, and some people are more serious about it, but I was just thinking of my own neighborhood that I lived in, which was the village that I had lived in, and how people think about it. And I'll just read it, I think. Walking along a street in a neighborhood where the black trash bags are stacked as neat as a woodpile in Vermont, my lover said to me, "Oh, will we ever live in a district like this where the artists are growing old in brownstones and their grandchildren visit them with watercolors and pastels? If we could only find a condominium or a co-op like the one on 9th Street, where the tenants themselves have lovingly laid a mulch of pine branches among the roses." Then I answered my lover, "It is probably too late for sentiment of that kind. We are fated to create our own community in the borough of Brooklyn or Staten Island, though there are many who are happy in the little cities across the river in another state, where we might well establish patterns of comfort and gently rising affluence, all of which requires, of course, that the earth be not blown up or irremediably poisoned, and that you and I remain, if not lovers, at least cordial creators of family and continuity."
So this is a conversation you imagine people having walking through your old neighborhood?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, they like, people walk down 11th Street and they look in the windows. And I remember 45 years ago, or maybe 50. No, yeah, maybe 50, doing the same thing.
Now, you have a home in Vermont now.
Yes.
Do you still have a place in New York?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So you're living in both worlds.
Well, I live basically now in Vermont. It's in my husband's hometown, and that's where I live. And I come to New York, and I miss it.
I remember you once telling me that your sense of kind of like folk stories or folk tales was gossip.
Yeah.
And that gossip was just a great source material for you, and you wanted the sound of it, the informality of it, the style of it in your writing.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if, like, the gossip is different in a town in Vermont than it is on the stoops of Manhattan apartments.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot more of it occurs on the telephone because the distances are very great. But, I mean, I think of gossip as sort of just a normal oral histories that people tell each other all the time. And it happens there. But, you know, it's the kind of thing, actually, that you do with very close friends over a long period of time. And basically, most of my friends are here, although I have very good friends in Vermont. But my Gabby ones are in New York.
Grace, there's a poem I'm going to ask you to read called Fear.
Right.
And this is a poem that you wrote in Vermont.
Yes, I did. This poem is called Fear. I am afraid of nature. Because of nature, I am mortal. My children and my grandchildren are also mortal. I lived in the city for 40 years. In this way, I escaped fear.
When did you write that? What were you thinking about?
I didn't write it too long ago. I was really, I really meant what I said. I was simply thinking of the movement of life and death in the fields and in the mountains and in the animals around me, and which you're very close to. You're much more close to it. You know, we think about the cities as being so dangerous and full of guns and so forth, but in a very strange way, you really are closer to birth and life and death in the countryside.
Do you find living in the country brings out different anxieties in you than living in the city?
I'm not an anxious person.
Gosh, you're lucky. No, I envy you.
I mean, I worry, but I'm not anxious.
Writer Grace Paley is my guest. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Grace Paley, and she has a new book called New and Collected Poems. You've been an activist all of your adult life, peace activist, anti-nuclear activist. But as an adult, I think some of your activist work really started with the PTA, which would in some ways be a surprising place for peace activism to start.
Well, it's true, but I think I had very strong pacifist leanings before that, but having children made me feel more so, and I've always believed in working where I am, you know, and so my children went to school, so I just naturally began to work in my community, which was the village, and that was in the PTA, and I really loved that period. I mean, I worked with parents, people like myself, who were in the same line of work, child rearing, and that was really, really great. And then around that time, the kids were being told that they had to hide under desks because they were about to be blown up or something like that. So I became very involved in that, and my own daughter, that I remember as a very young child, refused to do that.
Oh, she refused to duck and cover?
Yeah, she did. And so I was very concerned already about all that. And then as time went on, I could see the Vietnam War coming.
You've described yourself as a combative pacifist and a cooperative anarchist. Do you still think of yourself in that way?
Yeah, I seem to be living that way. I am, I'd say, more of a pacifist as time goes on, and I'd say that I try to be more cooperative as time goes on. But I think those are fair. I think they sort of omitted my very strong feelings about feminism, and I want to include that in as fast as I can.
You know, the kind of activism you were involved in was in some ways more typical of your children's generation than your own? Just in terms of the proportion of people who participated in those kinds of anti-war activities. I wonder if you ever felt separate from many people of your generation.
From my generation? No, we really had a lot of, in our peace center, there were people, most of the people were around our age. But it certainly is true that I remember going on one particular demonstration or action where everybody really treated me as a rather old person when I really must have been about 44 or something like that. So I always remember that, and I see I have young friends now who were friends of mine at that time, people in the resistance movement, which I regarded us, my age group's responsibility to support as much and as deeply as possible. I see these friends of mine now who are in their early 40s having to deal with people who are 20 who are as mean to them as they were to me. And I laugh.
How are they mean to you?
How were they?
Yeah.
Well, they really were. I mean, they treated us like older people, like old people. And as I said, we were about 43 or 44.
You are always, it seems to me, close in some ways to the generation older than you, your parents' generation. What I mean by that is that a lot of the characters in your short stories are from your parents' generation, the first generation of Eastern European Jews to come to New York.
Yeah.
And you capture their language and their spirit. And there's a poem I want you to read about giving political leaflets.
Oh, yeah.
To people of that generation in your neighborhood.
Yeah. I wrote this poem. Again, it's something I wrote. I tend to write poems not only out of grief and anxiety, but also for fun, too. So this one is called Street Corner Dialogue, and it's true. Thank God for the old Jewish ladies. Though their sons are splendid with houses and brilliant from college, they take our leaflets. Sometimes they say, Pishers, what's on your mind? Don't get excited. Hitler is dead. Where are the sweatshops? Then we say, Mrs., did you forget Vietnam? I won't speak about Israel. Turn around maybe 80 degrees. You'll see a few sweatshops. Not to mention imperialism's furnace, the nation of Africa. They answer, Of course. Oh, yes, as usual, we heard it before. Naturally. Ah, the poor people are dying, dying, dying. Foolish girl. Listen, you'll never stop at the dying from killing. Then we tell them, only 5 words. So? Why did you live? Uh-oh, a fresh mouth. But, darling, you're right. In your life, you shouldn't give up the ship. So long you got strength. Maybe this world wouldn't turn out a total disaster.
I like that poem a lot. Did you feel that in their own way, the older people in the neighborhood were encouraging to you?
They were. And it's true. I mean, I actually wrote this fairly recently, so I'm just about as old as they are. But what I was feeling very much was, when you stand on a street corner and give out leaflets, a lot of people don't take them. You know, and you begin to see who's taking them, who's not taking them, and you begin to develop theories and ideas, most of which are false. But in this case, I noticed that these old ladies, old Jewish ladies like me, were taking the leaflets.
Tell me why you've always had an affinity as a writer for describing people like that.
Well, I really do describe really lots of other kinds of people, but I think mostly in my first book, I think I had to go and deal with my own family and think about how they had come and lived on this American earth. And I'm actually not through with it. I mean, I think I seemed in more in the middle of my writing life to have gone away from that to a very present tense. In my own mind now, I'm going back to some of the other stuff to certain mysteries about that period. And an example would be that I'm very interested in and have written a poem and some stories even about an uncle of mine who was deported during the Palmer Raids in the 1920s and early 1920s or late 19s. And my family never talked about him. And it's something that has perplexed me and I don't understand it. So you really write about what you don't understand, you know. So I'm up to not understanding that right now.
No, you said you were curious. You wanted to kind of find out more about the mysteries of how your parents came here. There's actually a really interesting story behind some of that I'd like for you to tell, about how the Tsar let political prisoners.
Oh, yeah, right. You know that story, right? I must. What happened was that my parents in Russia were political people, were socialists, and very active and very young. Also, they must have been 19, 20 years old. And my father was imprisoned and sent to Arkhangelsk, really, and my mother was sent into exile. And then the Tsar Nicholas, had a son. And when he had a son, he pardoned everybody under 21. And in this way, my parents were pardoned, my father was pardoned, my mother came back from Germany, and they got on a boat pretty fast and came to the United States.
Did they understand your activism?
They did. I mean, they understood it, but they really were they were bothered by it because, like a lot of immigrants who come here, they became extremely patriotic. And although they didn't give up lots of their politics, they would be very disturbed, say in those early years, you know, in the 1930s and 20s and so forth. About treatments of blacks and things. I mean, their basic politics were really very deep and humane, in every way. But in the beginning of my being against, especially the Vietnam War or anti-nuclear work or anything like that, they were really troubled in a way and felt that I was, you know, spending too much time doing all of that. And on the other hand, my mother died when I was in my 20s, but my father came around to a lot of stuff, and I have a couple of poems even on his worries about the fact that he was going to die before Nixon or Johnson figured how to get out of the war.
I'm wondering if he was protective of you since he was exiled because of his political beliefs under the Tsar in Russia. He might have felt that you were going to be punished for your political beliefs in the United States.
Oh, yes. No, they felt like that. I think they also my father, because my mother was dead, I think he also felt a little pleased at the same time that he worried. He was pleased.
But you were carrying on his legacy in some way.
Yeah.
Grace Paley, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Grace Paley's new book, New and Collected Poems, is published by Tilbury House. Paley is one of many writers who the FBI once kept a file on. On the next Fresh Air, we'll hear from the author of a new book about the FBI's surveillance of American writers. This is Fresh Air.